Hi, I'm Notre Dame safety Kyle Hamilton, and you're listening to Single High, a Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com, the official home of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club.
Back to throw, Meyer. Looks, rolls to the right. Pump fake, throws the ball. It is caught, Reggie Brooks! Reggie Brooks got it!
Downfield, and Hamilton again, coming over from that safety position and making the interception.
DB's on the field, the Sherron Jones throws.
To go almost 20 yards.
Ishmael down around the 5-yard line. The kick will come down and Ragib will take it. Takes it at the 12, 15, 20, 25. He's at the 30. Afterburners are on. He's gone.
That is the All-American Kyle Hamilton. His sixth career interception.
40, 45, 50. Down the sideline. At the 35. Or right to the goal line. At the 10. The 5. A touchdown.
Here are your hosts, Frank Vitovich and Greg Flamont.
Welcome back to another edition of Single High, Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com. Coming to you days before Notre Dame takes on Stanford, looking for their fourth victory in a row of the season and their fourth victory in a row over the Cardinal from Stanford. I am one of your hosts, Frank Vitovich, joined as always by the president of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club and video analyst at Irish Sports Daily, Mr. Greg Flamong. Not going to lie to you, Greg, I'm a little tired tonight. So how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. We got a little home game. I think you got to get your rest for a little home night game.
I do. Oh man, I hadn't even thought of how tired I am right now and the fact that I got Notre Dame night game Saturday night, Eagles night game, Sunday night, back-to-back. That doesn't sound like a good Monday for me. Little tired. I might have done some things and stayed out a little too late for a 40-year-old man last night after a little work event. But it was fun to forget for like 2 hours that I was 40 and, you know, had a child that was going to wake up real early and had all those life responsibilities. That 2 hour window was glorious.
Well, when you're 40, you forget for 2 hours and then you're reminded. And instead it used to be like, oh, I'd forget for like, you should be able to forget how old you are for like a whole night.
Oh, or like a weekend. Yeah. You'd be like, maybe your 20s, even early 30s. It's like a whole weekend would go by. You'd be like, oh, that went by quick. I don't know what the hell happened, but that was fun. But it was a good time. Phillies did not do their part and win the game that I was watching at a bar with some coworkers and clients. But other than that, great time until I woke up this morning. And it was weird, as I didn't even feel bad. I was just like, I am just exhausted.
Yeah.
Couldn't function. Brain was like, hey, we're not going to make you feel bad, but you're just not going to be able to think this morning. It was a good time. So on that note, I got to keep that going for the brand. I got a beer. We got a game. We got some recruiting we could even talk about tonight for the first time in a while. It seems like we're on the verge of some good or potentially good, good recruiting news. So that's fun for our Irish here. But I figured we'd start off on a little bit of a lighter note. Some comments the head football coach at Stanford made this week. Many people are talking about the epic goal line stand, which is now 10 years ago, which is that's depressing in a way.
It's the 10-year anniversary. Maybe that's why it
doesn't seem like it's 10 years. I don't want it to be.
It's the 10-year anniversary. Maybe that's why it came up today.
Maybe that's why many people are talking, according to David Shaw. But for those of you who didn't hear, he seems pretty convinced. He's heard, I guess, some compelling evidence that they got in the end zone there. In that, what's your take on that?
I just think bringing in the many people are saying, is really good. I think that's key, because especially now in 2022, because that's been very prevalent in our society for the last, I guess, 6 years now. Many people are saying, and so then whenever you go with like many people are saying, it's a kind of a cue that whatever follows is going to be completely made up. Right. It's not going to be because, you know, the quote was there's people in the truck. He doesn't seek them out. They seek him out and they're looking to talk to him. And many people are saying that, not on the fourth down play, but on the, he said it was the first down play. It's actually the second down play, because the first down play, he went down at like the three. So
yeah, it's not nonsensical.
It's a second down play. And people are going up to him. The strong, beautiful men with tears in their eyes going up to him. I added that part myself.
It's good.
With tears in their eyes, telling them that he was actually in the end zone on the second down play, and it wasn't reviewed, and it's unfortunate due to the change of rules that also didn't make any sense. His explanation of the rule changes and all those other things also didn't make sense. Yeah. So none of this makes any sense, and it's just a made up story. And I think that's great. I think it's great that we're making up stories 10 years after the fact to distract from the fact that his team is 1-4 and they're terrible at football.
So. They're not good. I don't know if they're terrible. We could talk about that.
Say this. This is why I say terrible, is because I asked Jamie today on our preview show. I asked him where their defense compared to North Carolina. So I said the last three defenses, right? So I did Cal, North Carolina, BYU. Like, where do they rank in those three? And he said they're worse than North Carolina. That's why I feel comfortable in saying that they're terrible.
Wow. Okay. Well, I will trust Jamie's.
I feel like this is a fair one.
I will trust Jamie's judgment on that one. I wouldn't have thought he would have put them worse than North Carolina, because their defense is just something else.
Well, let's see. There's a couple stats. They're 130th in stuff rate.
Yeah.
Which is basically like how many times you're stopping the opponent basically within 1 yard on a run play. Mm-hmm. They're 130th, and that out of 131, right? And I told them, and so the last place team is Army. And so I said, in order to respect the troops, I think it would only be right that Stanford is dropped down to the 131st spot, so that Army doesn't have to have that moniker. I feel like that's the right thing.
Only fair. I mean, Notre Dame just released the line of gear. I got the email about it. I forget what they're calling it. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't.
What is it? It's basically the yearly camo line of gear that they
They're respecting the troops line.
Yeah, but it's not, I think the NFL like has that. I forget what they're calling it. I saw the email, so it would go right in line with that.
There's another stat that Jamie put out there talking about, referring to respecting the troops.
Yeah.
I think they're just ahead of Navy, which was it was in the hundreds, in the hundreds, but just ahead of Navy in red zone trips.
Ooh.
So they don't get, so they're a good red zone team, but they're very bad at getting to the red zone. So I think in order to, again, respect the troops, I think Notre Dame should not allow Stanford to get into the red zone in this game.
Only fair. That's the only fair way to do it. It's interesting that he has him, that bad. Just because their record is definitely terrible at 1-4. But there's been times this year, and especially because their only win is over Colgate. There were times this year where you're like, well, you know, they're bad, but they're not like 2007 Notre Dame bad, where you're just like, well,
they're not that.
Even though the record is like comparable.
They hung in there with USC. They had some unfortunate turnover luck in that game.
Should have beat Oregon State. And then Morgan State had their backup quarterback in, but you know, still should have won, you know, should have won that game. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be, I don't think this is a game that Notre Dame should definitely win and win relatively easily, but at the same time, you know, they can't screw around this week, like, and just get by. I don't think Notre Dame is good enough yet to do that. Where you could just not play your best and still, you know, and still walk away with a win. Because that's what happened against Marshall, where they did not play their best. Now they were their second best or their third best. And Marshall just has decided to keep losing games to everybody else that's not Notre Dame, basically, and just making all of us Notre Dame fans more upset each with each passing loss. That, that that Marshall has, but yeah, their defense is not it's not a good defense.
What I would say, I mean, yeah, like what I would say is like if Notre Dame plays bad, I mean, you could lose to any team. I mean, it's obviously as we've seen, right?
So, right.
It's not that. I just, I mean, if we expect Notre Dame to play well, and I think we should, right? They've played well in the last. There's certainly in the last two games, and then basically like the last two and three quarters.
Yeah,
you know,
2 and 3 quarters.
They've played well, so I, you know, I think that's a reasonable expectation. And Stanford
has
only
been like five bad quarters Notre Dame has played this year, and I mean maybe count six. You know, if you want to count the fourth quarter at Ohio State.
Honestly, I don't even like. You know how I'm throwing out the Marshall game.
Yeah.
I'm throwing out Ohio State too. I don't know what to make of that game. It does, because here's the other thing, right? So you know how I've been saying, like, okay, the Marshall game, it's not indicative of the team, and we know that because of the way they've played in the last three. You know? So the bad thing about Marshall is A, you lose to Marshall and they're not good, and you should never lose to them. But also it kind of it gives you a clue and some a hint about like, what is this team about? You know, can't beat Marshall. How are you going to win at North Carolina? How are you going to beat BYU? You know? Mm-hmm. And so when you go and beat those teams and you look completely different, then it's like, okay, Marshall game doesn't count. Right.
Yeah.
And we keep talking about how, you know, Notre Dame held Ohio State to 21 points and, you know, that's great and all that stuff, but it kind of works the same way. Whereas you think, okay, that's indicative of what this defense is and what this defense is going to be. And it kind of isn't.
Right.
You know, I North Carolina played, you know, they didn't, North Carolina obviously had got some traction against them. And obviously BYU at times got some traction against them, especially in the running game. And so it's kind of like, for me, the Ohio State game wasn't indicative of them defensively and being able to hold teams down, right? So you figure, well, you hold Ohio State to 21, well, then no one else should really be getting to 21 because that's a great offense. Well,
right,
that's not how it's gone. So
that's true. You know what's interesting about that Ohio State game, though, in terms of the defensive performance, is that it's actually, and this surprised me, it's actually their lowest team defense rated game on PFF this year. Which is surprising. When I look at the numbers, I look at it at Ohio State, it was a 57.8 for defense. That's the lowest. 63.3 at North Carolina is next. 63.8 at Marshall. 66.4 at BYU. And then 81.9 at versus Cal.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Just even looking at, you know, looking at that. I mean, that was their worst tackling game based on ratings, which I think that one actually does pass the eye test too. That one, watching that game, were so many missed tackles. And that that did not that not not help their help their rating in that contest. But I'll tend to agree with you in that if Notre Dame played Ohio State again, I'm not expecting them to hold them to 21 points after what we've seen the last 2 weeks. Now, I do kind of think we're going to see them hold Stanford under 21 points this weekend, though, for the first time since, what, Cal, right? Yeah, it was Trying to think of, I can't remember the Cal score off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess BYU was under 21 as well, but it was 20. So
definitely. I mean, I actually picked exactly 21. I have Notre Dame winning 41-21. Stanford's like a kind of a classic, like late drive in the fourth when it's 41-14. And it's like they score a touchdown that is annoying, you know, one of those things. Yeah. Kind of like North Carolina did, right? Similar kind of fashion. So
they got a good quarterback.
They do. I mean, yeah, they have a pretty good quarterback. I mean, they've had that though since 2019. You know, they had Davis Mills, who's a really good quarterback, and he's starting for the Texans right now. Yeah. You know, so they had him in 19, and then they had him in they had him last year too, and or no, they had McKee last year, but it was kind of the same thing, right? They could move the ball. I mean, because here's the other thing, like we were talking about, we're going to talk about how they. And we have a question, I think, from Drew Brennan about how they almost beat USC, right? Well, last year, they boat raced USC. I mean, they looked amazing on offense against USC early in the year, right? And then by the time they got to us, they were in shambles. And I think this year is probably going to be a similar thing, right? They're down the top running back. They're down two starting offensive linemen from a group that already wasn't very good. So it's just kind of like, yeah, like in week two, they look good. And then they found out they were bad again, you know? So.
Well, and USC was also kind of a dumpster fire last year. Not as much this year, sadly, which sucks. I like when USC is not good. I really like when they're not good at football.
Yeah.
I do like, I will say, I love where the Stanford program has kind of fallen, you know, post Harbaugh now, you know, David Shaw, whatever year number he's in now. Because I remember when Harbaugh left being like, okay, it's going to fall off pretty quick. And it took a while for things to fall off for David Shaw. But I really enjoy that they have fallen off and where the Stanford program is, you know, right now. Because I've never – I don't know. I've never liked him as an opposing coach. He's always – I don't know that he's quite Narduzzi level, but he is, he's not a likable opposing coach. And there's just in, I don't know if you have the game on while we're recording, folks, the Thursday night football game is on. Ridiculous play to end that game, essentially.
Oh. I do not have it on, but I'm sure I will see it.
It's so close. Fourth and goal. Bears went for it because they had to. And I mean, the receiver, it looked like it was Mooney. If he catches it clean at first, it's across the line. He bobbles it. And he secures it about 6 inches from the goal line.
Oh, so, that's no good.
No, it's not. So the Commanders looks like they'll get a win, and all they have to do is execute a quarterback sneak, which they just did. So, wild ending to Thursday night football. You know, hopefully there's not a wild ending to the to the Notre Dame Stanford game on Saturday night. I would really like a comfortable game, comfortable victory where we don't have to worry in the fourth quarter, you know, too much at all. Maybe see some backups. It's happened against Stanford the last two times Notre Dame has played them, played Stanford, where they basically, you know, just boat raced them and put up 45 on them both times. So that would be nice. That would be a good outcome. But Notre Dame's going to do it. They're going to be doing it without one of their captains. Notre Dame lost another captain, for the year. This week in practice, Marcus Freeman confirmed today. Bo Bauer, linebacker, out for the year with a knee injury, which, I mean, again, it's just like, you know, Avery Davis, when he got hurt, it's like the first thing you think of is just sucks for him. Because, one, he had a chance to break Kurt Heinisch's record for games played at Notre Dame, which could have never been broken because he had the extra free COVID year that he took advantage of.
Right.
And it's not going to happen again. So, I mean, maybe, I guess maybe there may be one or two players on the roster, you know, I mean, who might have a chance if they were to also use that free year in 2020, could have maybe, maybe challenged it, but it's a record that would have been pretty hard to break. And now he's going to be out for the rest of the year, which is, like I said, it's a huge bummer for him. He wasn't playing a lot before the injury, but this felt kind of like a Bo Bauer type game going against Stanford. You thought maybe you'd see some of your more kind of traditional, you know, bigger linebackers out there. And we're not going to. So who do you think? I know Freeman said today, you know, Prince Colley will probably be on the field more with, you know, with Bauer out. But I guess what are your thoughts on how Notre Dame, you know, handles or overcomes, you know, losing Bauer for the final seven games of the season here?
I mean, on the field, he just hasn't played that much, you know, and I think there's a shoulder issue too, you know, so he'd been kind of de-emphasized. I mean, obviously he made the good play on the goal line last week, and that was a great play.
Yeah.
It's weird. I think they miss him in the sense that, like, if the 2021 version of Bo Bauer was in there, I feel like he'd be playing a lot, you know, because I like that, so you know, he was having a really good season. I don't know. It just didn't happen for him this year. And that's a bummer, man. But it's tough because, first of all, he's a really good special teams player. So that hurts. But it's just like he had a good spirit, man. It was just like the vibe that he brought, you know, the wavy hair and everything. And he had really good energy all the time. I felt like he was someone that kind of lifted the team up. And so to lose that, I think is tough. You know, I mean, he's a voted a captain, right? I mean, so that obviously has some utility to it. So it's a bummer. I appreciate him for the interception. I tweeted about it. The interception against USC when I was mentally in shambles because Kyle had just gotten hurt. And it was like, oh, Kyle's hurt. Now are we going to lose to USC? And then he kind of picked off the pass and, you know, ran it down to the three. So a lot of good stuff from Bo Bauer. It's a bummer that it has to end this way. But, yeah, I mean, maybe more Prince Colley, maybe more Junior Tuli Alamaka. We can get some more snaps there. So, you know, that this – anytime someone goes down, it's an opportunity for another player.
Would you have ever been able to go back to a home game at Notre Dame Stadium if the first game you had gone to in years resulted in a loss to USC and the final play, Kyle Hamilton's Notre Dame career? Because that's what happened. Because that one of those two things did happen while you were there. Would you have been able to go back, or would you have been like, I'm gone for 10 years at this point. I'm not coming back for a long time.
Am I never going back? I mean, maybe like,
not never, but like
maybe ISD never brings me on. Like maybe ISD never brings me on. Right. Maybe it's just like that never happens. You know, I don't know. I mean, it would have been, I said I was in shambles as it was.
I can only imagine.
So if they had lost then, fly all the way back, and I was with Michael too, so he would have been making fun of me the whole time.
Yeah.
I think it would have been not good, I'll tell you that.
Nope. Not good at all. Not good at all. Well, luckily, one of those two things did not happen for your sake on that trip. But you know, before we actually see, we're doing good on time. One thing I thought we'd talk a little bit about, we haven't talked about in, it feels like, a long time, is recruiting. Notre Dame's got itself a nice little low-key, big recruiting weekend, you know, lined up for this game, with Jeremiah Love coming in on an unofficial visit. You got Brandon Hillman coming in, who's one of the newer offers, on an official. He's taking an official visit. I believe Drake Bowen is going to be there because he's there every weekend already. I think CJ Carr might be unofficially coming as well. And then you got some big 2024 guys coming in. And now, name escaping me, you got the big lineman committed to Wisconsin coming in, who's in the 2023 class this week too.
Right. Doesn't have an offer yet.
Does not have an offer yet.
Trying to earn an offer.
Yes, which, and Notre Dame's still trying to replace Elijah Page. So that could be, we'll see how things go. But it's like the first one of these in a little while. We're like, okay, this is there's some names, there's some players that. Oh, and if I'm not mistaken, Christian Gray is also unofficially visiting as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, all of the good St. Louis area football players are going to be in South Bend, Indiana this weekend to see Notre Dame take on take on Stanford. And I'll say, man, I hope that this is the trip that locks up, Jeremiah Love for Notre Dame, because I think this class has got a really good chance, to be one of the best collections of skill players we've seen Notre Dame add in a while. But to do that, you got to get Love to start, and then hopefully somebody like Tayshaun, Lyons. But also saw right before we got on. Was catching up and saw we had another 2023 wide receiver offer go out today. So I don't know what that means for Notre Dame's wide receiver board. But you think this is the one? This is the trip that seals the deal for Notre Dame with Love?
We hope so, right? I mean, mm-hmm. it certainly appears that way. You know, he's coming in with a big contingent of his family after bringing a lot of people to the previous game. So hopefully, I mean, shoot, the last time he was here, they lost to Marshall. So hopefully,
oh man, would lose. Maybe
that just occurred to me. Maybe, yeah, I don't know. Maybe we don't want him to come to these games.
Stop.
I'm just kidding. Hopefully this is the one that does it, you know, and I really think that the way that Notre Dame's backs have been used the last 3 weeks, I think if for someone like him, I mean, if they're all getting around 13 touches a game in multiple ways, I think that's what else would you want, right? Like, you're running inside, you're running outside, you're catching passes, you're blocking, you're doing all these other things. So, it's a good situation to be a running back for Notre Dame right now.
That it is, and I'll say I've been somewhat critical of Tommy Rees at times. One thing the man can do is get his running backs involved in just so many ways. It is impressive what he's able to do, which gives me hope that if Notre Dame ever fills its receiver room with as much talent and depth as the running back room, which is looking like, again, this class would be a good start towards that he'll be able to do some fun and exciting things with them as well, because he's really doing a good job with his three-headed monster that they have at running back right now.
Agree to agree.
Other than that, what do you? I mean, we haven't talked. Like I said, we haven't talked recruiting on our pod here in a while. What's your take on Hillman? Just that. Where he could potentially fit in, because it seems like, again, the buzz is really trending and pointing towards Notre Dame with a guy, with him. And he seems like a player that is almost like the classic, like, really, really, really good athlete, can do a lot of really good things. Just get him on campus and kind of figure out where he best can help this team.
Yeah, I think Notre Dame's, I mean, they've had success with a couple guys like this, right? So, like, Avery Davis was one.
Oh, yeah.
And he was Avery Davis was signed as a quarterback, and then he eventually got moved. But it was a good outcome. It was a good athlete.
Yeah.
And the other one was Jalen Elliott, who he was a quarterback, and that was like they were definitely bringing him in as a safety. And so Hillman, I mean, I don't know. I think it's like kind of like running back offer, but open to whatever. Like, I could see him moving to safety. He's got the body for it. He's got the athleticism for it. He's good with the ball in his hands. I think it's one of those things where I think Notre Dame saw themselves taking 27, 28.
Yeah.
And they're sitting there at what, 22 right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you start to take some flyers, right? You start to, even if you take, like, even if you land Lyons and Love, that's 24, you have 3-4 spots that you want to fill up. So, it's take a flyer on a guy that you like. So I dig it. I think it's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and you still you're hopeful that in some way one of those spots ends up being a quarterback. That would be nice to have. You know, those are usually good to have in a recruiting class.
It would be nice to have a quarterback, yes.
It would be nice to have one of those things. As we learned, you need them. Who knew, right? So it would be nice to have one in this class. You still need a pass rusher to fill the void that was created when Keon Keeley decommitted, and you need a lineman to fill the spot that opened up when Elijah Page decommitted a couple weeks back. So it seems like even though it's been pretty slow, hopefully things start to start to heat up. Hopefully, Notre Dame keeps winning some games here too, and they can regain the momentum that they once had. You know, with this class that might have, I want to say slowed down completely with the Marshall loss, but that was definitely one where you're like, oh, what is this going to do to recruiting? And then there hasn't been a whole lot positive on the recruiting trail since then. So winning the three in a row, hopefully winning the fourth in a row on Saturday will help with that.
Yeah, and it was kind of one of those things where there was kind of nowhere to go but down at that point, like especially after losing to Marshall, because you only had Love and I guess Tayshaun Lyons at that point, yeah, right? So it's they weren't in on they weren't in on Hillman at that point, so yeah. It was kind of like, well, I mean. And I think that game caused a lot of people to kind of take a pause, like, whoa, 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 like what's going on here? What's going on with this situation? But I think the last 3 weeks have kind of solidified, like, okay, it's not a complete disaster, right? Like the concern is, and I'm sure other schools were saying, like, look, Freeman's in over his head, right? He doesn't know what he's doing. He can't, it's too big for him, right? And then the last 3 weeks happened, and it's like, that's actually not true. He's gonna be just fine, yeah. So it's good. And by the way, the Wisconsin lineman, his name is Chris Tarek.
That is correct. Yes. Yeah. Thank you, sir. Sure. You know what? And going back to this Marshall game, I'm just going to say maybe we're going to look back at that as his Louisiana Monroe in a few years.
Maybe.
Nice. It would be nice. I would take that. If we had to lose to Marshall to win a national championship, in a later year, good with it. That's fine by me, because you think there's a single, I shouldn't say that, there's definitely probably one at least real bitter Alabama fan that talks about that Louisiana Monroe game. I really should have never lost that game type fan. But other than that, you think any Alabama fans care that they lost that game? However many years, what was that, 2006? Was that his first year?
Sure.
It was around then, right? I know he's been there for a while. So I bet you, I can't imagine there's any Bama fans who look back at that and complain still. So that would be real nice. It would be very nice if 5-6 years from now we're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, Marshall game was freaking weird, man. Like, yeah, but now we're real good. So who cares? I would like it. That would make me happy. That would make me very happy.
That would be good.
Right? That would be good. I mean, we deserve that. Yeah. Too. We deserve to to have the good things. I feel like after what this, all the things the program has gone through, over the last 30-ish years since the last title. So lots of good things are, like I said, the momentum is starting to swing back, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it keeps going. Hopefully we get the win this weekend. Hopefully we get Love to commit shortly after. This is one weird one where it almost feels like, again, reading tea leaves, that Hillman could pop before Love, just the way his those two recruitments have kind of gone. But we'll see how that all works out. I'm gonna be real interested to see too. If they do end up making a move on the O-line offer with Tarek, because I mean, I guess you don't make the offer unless you're pretty sure that they're going to, you know, they're going to accept. If you get them on campus, they're committed right. elsewhere. Like you're not offering just to be like, hey, thanks for stopping by. Here's your offer. That's not right. how it works. You're offering if they're telling you like, coach, please offer and I will come here because my current school has no head coach because Wisconsin fired a relatively successful head coach who had like the same record as Jim Harbaugh at Michigan when Harbaugh got extended. That's pretty wild. There was a graphic I saw floating around that just showed like how Harbaugh had like the same record. He had fewer Big Ten titles and like fewer everything. The only thing he had more of was playoff appearances. But one got fired and one got extended. So I think we can only read that to mean that Michigan just accepts mediocrity at this point. And Wisconsin does not. I don't know how else to read it.
That's the only way to see it.
Right? Like what else can you how else could you possibly see it? So yep. All right, before we get into any questions, because we do have we have a few questions as always. What do you think? What are your keys to the game here? What do you think aside from like the well, if Notre Dame just plays clean football and you know they're gonna win, but what do you or maybe instead of saying it that way, what are you more hopeful to see from Notre Dame this weekend? Like, what would you like to see?
I want to see. You remember before the Marshall game, I was talking about like I don't want to see a bunch of third downs.
Yeah.
So in the BYU game, Notre Dame was very comfortable. I don't want to say comfortable. They were very willing to get into third down against them.
Yeah.
And maybe they just liked, you know, BYU's third down defense or whatever, right?
They converted a hell of a lot of them.
They did. And if there's going to – so the thing is like if there's going to be a way for Notre Dame to kind of scuffle against any team, right? And there's – a lot of the time when a team scuffles, there's no good reason for it. It's just like you're not playing well in a certain game, and it's kind of unexpected, right? There's no way to predict it. And one thing – one way that Notre Dame could scuffle is – you know, they get into a bunch of third and threes, third and fours, and when Pine has been a 78% passer, maybe he's a 60% passer, and you're not converting those third downs. And maybe it happens early, right, where you're punting a bunch of times where it's like, okay, like we should not be punting to them, and we are, and now we haven't scored yet.
Yeah.
And then they get some cheap play and some cheap touchdown, and it's like, oh, and now we're down 7-0, and then – and the crowd is making that noise that they make, you know. Like,
Oh, yeah. I remember during the Marshall game messaging you and sending you messages jokingly at the beginning. I'm like, uh-oh. Greg said he wanted to see 8 third downs, and we already have 5 in the first quarter. Whatever the numbers were, I forget.
Yeah.
And then I stopped once I realized it wasn't a joke anymore. And I was like, oh, I'm not even going to keep this going because this sucks. Right.
Yeah, it's that's how you do it, right? You get in the third down, you're not explosive, and it's like, hey, we're usually converting these, and now we're not.
Yeah.
You know, and then everyone's like, why'd you call that play on 3rd and 4? We're supposed to call another play that we convert, you know? And like I said, you know, the crowd makes that noise that everyone recognizes, and then everyone kind of tightens up. And that's how it happens, right? That's how, you know, kind of upsets happen. So,
yeah.
But my point is like, I want to see some explosiveness in this game, right? Yeah. I want to see Chris Tyree break one. I want to see them hit Braden Lindsey for once, you know. Get Lorenzo Styles running down the field. Get something for Tobias Merriweather in this game.
Have a wish list, sir.
It's beyond time, right? Like let's start to see some explosiveness. I don't need to see all of it. I'm just saying, like,
I thought you wanted all of these things to happen.
No. We need to get our skill guys.
You need like
let them what was that?
Like 2 of those 4 things.
Sure.
If two of those 4 things happen, I'm with you.
Let the horses run, man.
Between Tyree, Lindsey, Styles, and Merriweather. Like 2 of them, like a long play would be
right.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. I think for me, well, and one, I also looked up the third down stats from last game while we were riffing here. 11 of 16. First of all, yeah. 16 third downs. Whew, that's the biggest number I remember seeing in a long time looking at a box score. And 11 of 16. That's solid. But I don't want
to see probably not 16. Sustainable.
No, exactly. You know? Yeah, I don't want to see 16 third down attempts on Saturday night. I think the other thing I want to see Notre Dame's defense start to play to the level that we're expecting it, that we've been expecting it to, and the level that we've seen it play, right? Like, we've seen Notre Dame's defense go through these stretches where it's just like, yeah, the other offense can't move the ball at all. And then, like, BYU was just couldn't do anything in that first half. And then all of a sudden it went from like, well, they can't do anything to they can do everything. And that's not ideal. And it happened in North Carolina as well, where North Carolina wasn't as good in the first half as they were in the second half. So I want to see Notre Dame's defense just play a full four quarters. And I want to see Al Golden be able to, you know, to almost anticipate that he's going to anticipate the changes that he needs to make, assuming, you know, that they play a good first half. Because I think that's been the problem the last 2 weeks. It's like, well, or at least the last two games, not 2 weeks, because there was the bye week in between. It's like, well, we shut them down in the first half. And it's like, okay, well, they just spent all of halftime figuring out how to adjust to what you're doing. So anticipate what they're going to do and then, you know, make your adjustments. And it's like that didn't necessarily happen as well as it could have. Now, some of it was, you know, the blown assignments, which you can't necessarily, account for, other than knowing like, hey, most of the time I'm bringing, you know, pressure from, from a deep safety. It's not working out well for this defense. So maybe stop doing it. Like, other than that. Which is not ideal. I know it did help. What was it? Which now I can't remember which game where the safety blitz actually got home. Was it Marshall or was it Cal? I think it was Marshall.
It was Cal, but it was Cal, but
just take it out.
Well, it's like he blitzed from the linebacker position, right? So it's a safety, mm-hmm. but he's playing linebacker. Yeah. You know, like if you blitz like they blitzed Kyle last year a couple times from the nickel spot. It's like, okay, it's fine.
Yeah. You know? Well, it's also Kyle.
Well, no, but I'm saying like
you could blitz him from deep and he can make up for it because he's a freak.
No, you can't because he already did it. That's the thing. He did blitz from deep and he never got there. So don't ask other people to do it. But if you blitz him from the nickel, then nickels get home all the time.
Yeah. So that's what I want to see. I want to see the defense start to look like the defense that I was expecting all year. And the defense that we saw week one, some semblance of it. So, all right, let's go to questions. And then we could, we'll wrap it up. So, questions because it's a three-parter. From our good buddy, Chris Jenkins. Thank you, as always, for the questions, Chris. First part, is it safe to say, or would you agree, that Estime should be the lead back?
No, not necessarily. Because if this is what I'll say. If they were to choose a lead back, then I would go with him, yes. But I don't think I actually like what they're doing. I like how they're doing it. You know, yeah. I like that they all have a role. I like that they're all pretty fresh and I like that they're all kind of complementary to each other, you know? So I don't want them to go exclusively to one player. But if they did, but I think the point Chris is making is like, if they had to choose a lead back, then I would want it to be estimated.
Yeah, well, and I think it's even almost a situation here where like, he kind of is in some ways to me already. Like, I feel like SMA is like where they go the most. And in terms of like running back stuff, like we talked about, you know, last week, where it's all SMA does is running back stuff. But Like, I feel like they're asking Tyree to do different types of things. Diggs gets asked to do maybe, you know, some different things as well. They're used, you know, a little bit more as receivers, it feels like, at least, than Estime, even though he's made a couple, you know, nice plays in the passing game himself. But it almost feels like he is more of that, like, well, the de facto top, you know, back in terms of, like, hey, we need 3-4 yards here. This is who we're going to go to. I agree that I like with the rotation that Notre Dame is, going with right now. Second question from Chris. Do you think Jaden Thomas is going to start to emerge as a go-to beside Mayer after his performance on Saturday?
Let's define go-to.
I took this as, you know, as Chris asking, do we think that, like, Pine is going to look Mayer, then Thomas, and then everything else, like, in that order? Because that's what, if you, you know, Mayer's the go-to, that's not changing ever.
Right.
So then it's like, well, if he's covered, does he then, like, immediately look to, you know, to Thomas first before he goes through his progressions or as he's going through his progressions? I don't think so. I think if anything, yeah, Thomas emerging maybe gives Lorenzo Styles a little bit more room to work. The other thing to think of, I guess the other way to look at it too, is Thomas's game does kind of lend itself a little bit more towards Drew Pine's game, in that he's not necessarily the big downfield threat speed player that Styles is. Although, yeah, we didn't talk about this in the post game pod, but this really annoyed the hell out of me, is Jason Garrett in the telecast on Saturday. Oh, Lorenzo Styles, he's more of a possession receiver for Notre Dame, but they tried to get him going. I was like, have you studied this team at all? Have you talked, like, Lorenzo Styles is not a possession receiver. Like, come on, man. Anyway. That really annoyed me. It bothered me because that's just like, do your homework. It's not so, even.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, no. So I don't. Again, I don't. I mute the games. I can't. I just can't. I don't want to be annoyed by things that aren't the football team. You know. Sure. And so that's my stance on Jason Garrett. But so here's the thing that I would say to this is positive reinforcement, right? Drew Pine looked for Jaden Thomas a couple times when it was kind of part of the progression, you know, and he was reinforced for that, right? Completions. He looked for Jaden Thomas on a jump ball when he wasn't necessarily open, but he threw him the ball, and he was reinforced for that, right? Sure. So I think on plays where it requires a progression, and he knows Jaden Thomas is out there, I think he's more likely now to be like, okay, let me progress down this line so I can find Jaden Thomas, because I was reinforced for that previously. I think Lorenzo will be, I don't know that that Tommy Rees is going to be like, okay, we are going to call this route specifically so that Jaden Thomas gets the ball thrown to him. I don't know if it's there yet. But I know that that is probably the case for Lorenzo Styles.
Yep.
And so I guess it's kind of, again, one of those things, like, I see where Chris is coming from. But I think this is a way for kind of both guys to be quote unquote go-to players. Whereas I think Notre Dame is going to specifically target Lorenzo Styles. I think that Drew Pine is also now, it's like, hey, once you get reinforced for something, you're going to keep on doing it, right? That's just the nature of natural human behavior. So I would expect Jaden Thomas to be getting 3-4 catches kind of per game now for kind of the rest of the year. That's what I would expect.
Yeah, and I think that would be huge for this offense, because you need
right. another receiver. So it'll be a thing where it's like, we're not talking about Jaden Thomas every time he catches one or two
many
balls
people will not be saying.
many people will not be saying.
No, last question from Chris that we have is, why the F and how is Mayer not in the Heisman conversation? Is it the Notre Dame hate? I don't think so.
It is that people hate that they lost to Marshall. That's what it is.
You think that's why Mayer's not in the Heisman conversation?
No. I think he's not in the Heisman conversation because he didn't really do anything against Ohio State. They lost to Marshall.
Yeah.
And he didn't really do anything in that game. And he caught two passes for 10 yards against Cal. That's why.
Yeah. And, I mean, you look at his stats. Michael Mayer is amazing. He's probably the best tight end in the country. We talked about this. Might go down as the greatest tight end in Notre Dame history. But, yeah, when you look at his stats, he's five games. He's got 351 receiving yards and five touchdowns. That's like that averages out to about 65 yards and a touchdown a game. So, like, that's not going to get you Heisman buzz, even at, you know, a position where, you know, 65 yards is pretty good production from, you know, a tight end every game. But that's just not going to get you, you know, Heisman buzz. I mean, in general. So
I think the goal that's reasonable is we want him to be first team All-American over Brock Bowers. That's the goal for him.
And at least the Mackey Award finalist this year.
You're right. Yeah.
Like just the finalists.
I mean, he's on the watch list, so that's good.
All right, we'll move on. We'll move on to questions because we're coming up here on we're closing in on an hour. But we got one from our buddy Oscar, who says, "What would you worry?" This is a fun question, by the way. What would worry you more? 17-3 Stanford end of the first quarter, or 45-42 Notre Dame end of the third quarter? So down 14 after one. We're up three after three, but it's a high-scoring game.
So 45-42 would worry me more.
Me too.
Because if they're down 17-3 after the first quarter, well, I mean, that's bad Drew Pine quarter. So that would kind of make sense, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Drew Pine hasn't turned into Joe Montana yet. That comes in the second quarter.
Exactly.
So I would be worried in both scenarios, but I'd be more worried about 45-42 because then it's like, okay, we've given up 42 points through three quarters to these jokers.
Exactly.
And obviously the offense is humming, but it's like,
yeah,
Jesus, you know, that would concern me for sure. Exactly. That would be more.
Because I would just be like, well, now I don't know what the hell to expect the rest of the season. You give up 42 to Stanford through three quarters, and I'm thinking like, well, now maybe Syracuse is a loss. You know, maybe Phil does light us up in November. I don't know. But we've seen the game. What was it? Yeah, 24 points. Notre Dame put up 24 points in the second quarter against North Carolina. So
I mean, there's like kind of a weird, you know, it's like we're up 45-42 in the fourth quarter. Like, who has the ball?
True.
You know, does Stanford have the ball? Because if Stanford has the ball, we're up 45-42. Like, if we're down 17-13 after the first quarter, but Stanford has the ball then, like, then I would – that shifts it, you know?
That's true.
So that's kind of where I'm – but just generally speaking, like, without factoring any of that in, like, I'd be less worried about
I don't want Stanford to score 42 points on Notre Dame.
That would be not great.
I don't want them to score 22, let alone 42. So
right.
Next question from Oscar is, what uniform does Notre Dame wear?
So is it a prediction?
He's asking what uniform. Yeah.
They're going to wear blue.
Yeah, they will. Yeah. Love it if they wore just came out in green the rest of the way.
Jamie had a great idea on the show today. He said, wear green for all the rivalries. And I was like, oh, that's good. That's a good idea. Like it.
It's like a really happy medium.
Yeah. 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 Cause my point was like, then it becomes like not a – it's not like for inspiration. It's showing the specialness of the rivalry, the game. So it's like we're playing a rival, we're wearing green.
I like it.
And then like when you play Michigan, you wear blue because F them.
I like that. That's true. Well, that's not for like another 10 years or whatever, right? I forget. when that game is on the books. But it is funny. One of my new neighbor buddies is who's a big Eagles fan. I watch Eagles games with. He went to Michigan. It's been tough. It's been tough.
It's tough.
I know. We try not to talk the college football in too much because it gets down those roads that we don't want to go. Because we're like, this is good. This is going well. We don't want to. We don't need to bring in the college teams to sully this just yet. Oscar also asks us though, will there be an amazing light show? And then afterwards, Notre Dame tweeted out basically, yes, there will be a light show. For the night game. So I don't got to cover that one. Last question from Oscar is, what's the best approach to tailgating for a night game? Food, drink, timing, and then it says all of it, or it all.
At all?
It all. Like, so, or timing it all. Timing it all together. Like, how do you plan out? What's the perfect tailgate scenario here for a night game like this?
I'm really bad.
You're not the big on tailgating, correct? You like to see your friends, I know, but not necessarily aren't like all on the.
Like, am I plan like for my own tailgate?
Or just like at a day? Let's say you were going to this game.
Yeah.
Any night game, and you were like, what's your perfect food and drink throughout the day, timing of when you're starting?
Oh, got it. Oh man. Jeez. Okay. So when do I want? Okay. So I assume, so morning time.
Yeah.
I think morning time, you want so before going, you want something kind of big.
Oh.
Because you're going to be walking, like that's when you kind of have the most energy. So that's when you're kind of like milling around. You want to just like get that food in your stomach because you don't want to be thinking about food the whole time, right? That's not what you want. So you get that. So let's say, okay, game 7:30. I'm kind of crazy. So I would eat it probably like 8.
Okay.
And so you eat at 8, like a nice meal. Like a breakfast burrito would be great.
Yeah.
You get to the stadium like 10 o'clock before people are there and you're just kind of walking around at that point. So then you just kind of walk it off, right? Tailgating comes. Then let's say you meet up with a bunch of people and then you're just kind of nibbling, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to eat too much. It doesn't matter if you can skip some chips, some dip or whatever, that sort of thing. You start doing that, right? And you're doing that from like 10 to 2. And then at like 3, that's when you want to go. You want to go big at that point because you, so from 3 to like 5, you know, that you get your main, like your meats, burgers, hot dogs, brats or whatever. Like you go big at that point at 3, and then. Because if it's a big game, like let's say it's like Stanford, you won't be, but like Clemson, you're going to be like kind of edgy, right? You're going to be kind of nervous. And as the game gets closer, you're going to start to feel that. So, so you do that. And then by the time you get out there, there's going to be a player walk. You're not going to be eating then. You should do the player walk thing. And then you get into the stadium. And then when you get into the stadium, you eat again.
Oh, yeah. That's key.
One more time, you got to eat before the game starts because once the game starts, you don't want to have to worry about it. And you also the thing too is like you got to be drinking. You got to be drinking like water all day because here's the thing, you don't want to because you're also going to be having alcohol.
Yeah,
it's a 7:30 game now, so you got to remember this. It's a 7:30 game. You want to be drinking all day because then you go to the bathroom. And you basically want to be like not having to go to the bathroom during the game. So you got to get it all out. And then you don't want to be like just drinking because then you're drunk and you can't really pay attention and you're not really into it. You don't really remember. And then like there's like 10, 15% chance of your quote unquote that guy who's like bumbling and stumbling in the stands. And it's like you're falling on people. And then they call the usher. And then your buddy has to be like, no, it's okay. Like, he's fine. Da, 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 da. So that's what it is.
All right. Wow. Yeah. So you gave that, you gave a very,
I gave it the full send. I respected Oxer's question and I went for it.
All right. So here's where my schedule on a game such as this, I don't know. It I guess differs a little is one. So this is assuming I'm going to the game because I'm not going to tailgate, you know, hard at my own home. Assuming I'm going. So in this scenario, this also means I went out the night before and I went to the Backer and I went to, you know, maybe O'Rourke's and I went to some of the other establishments. I went to the Midnight Drummer Circle. You know, I took all that in. So it's assuming that I'm waking up not in my best shape and I'm not in tip top shape. So when it is a night game, I will tell you, I absolutely love to get a run in around campus, around the area, like a 5-6 miler in the morning, run off, you know, all the nonsense, you know, from the night before, start with a nice clean slate, just get it all out. A lot of coffee to start after the run, that is. And then I will say, even though I'm Team Taco, a breakfast burrito is like just like ideal in this scenario where you're just like, just give me like all of it wrapped, something that I could walk with, because you're going to be doing that. So I am down with that, not down with a big, big sit down breakfast on a day like this. And I, for a 7:30 kickoff, I'll be honest, I am fine with like getting to campus at like noon. I don't need to start at super early. I'm fine around noon because, you know, that gives me a solid 6 hours to do some damage, which is more than enough. But once I'm there, I'm constant eating. It's like whatever's out. You just kind of like you said, just kind of nibble on. And then brats are key. That is, I will always prioritize those over everything else. Probably around the same time, like you said, like 2-3-ish, you're looking for, you know, you're looking for that. Definitely eat once in the stadium. So the key with the drinking though is that you really got to be strategic on a night game with what you are drinking. I love my good beers, but like you gotta be okay with drinking not great beer when you're tailgating all day. And that's just because otherwise, you're drinking it too fast if you're drinking really good stuff, or two, is probably too strong. And you set yourself up for failure. Yeah. So I tell you what, Founders All Day IPA is just aptly named. It's a great beer for that such occasion where you could drink it. And it doesn't. That's what last night, my little work happy hour, watching the Phillies game, you know, on TV, the Founders just kept coming. I'm like, this is great. These are like 4.5% alcohol. Like, just, this is fine. This can't hurt me after years of double IPAs and 8-9%ers. Bring them on. So I would go something like that. Mix in a Gatorade here and there. I don't drink a ton of water, I'll be honest, on an all day event like that, because then otherwise you are just in the bathroom like nonstop, and it's never fun. There's always long lines at the urinals. It's just never good. So that's my typical plan of attack on a night game. That's a great question. That's a fun one. That was more than more fun questions we've answered, I think, on this pod so far. Next to what was the one? It was the other one that came to mind right there was Oscar when he asked us the Kentucky Derby. Was it the Kentucky Derby themed question about which players would form the best jockey or something? Yeah. All right, so I like it. Thank you as always, Oscar. And you know what? Our buddy Chris Jenkins here also had a follow up later in the thread that I didn't see, where he asked, do we think we're going to get up enough to pull Pine and get Angeli, or it says to see some peanut butter and jelly time this weekend? I don't. I mean, I think if we do, it'll be like late. It'll be like the last 3 minutes. It's not going to be like, hey, we're going to get him in with like 9 minutes to go and let him throw the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like to speculate on like, oh, play all the seniors kind of stuff. Like, because what I'm saying is like just a bunch of backups.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like that always leads to like more aggravation. Like, you know, like, oh, man, we're only up 10. Like, we're not going to be able to play the backups. You know, like, I don't like to get in that headspace.
Especially not this year anymore. Like
we right, exactly, yeah.
You
yeah.
lose to Marshall, literally it's all bets off, and I am now.
Yeah, yeah. You lose to Marshall, you don't get. We don't care about backups.
Just win the games at this point. Like yeah. I'm not gonna sit here like and get upset if you know if backups aren't in. So, okay. We got Incuro Irish saying realistically, will Shaw get fired after we put up 250 yards on the ground and 250 in the air? And do you foresee Tyree regain his composure in this game?
Yes, to the second one.
Okay.
I think that'll happen.
I don't think Shaw gets fired, no matter what happens in
this
game.
I don't think so either.
It's maybe by the end of the year, but I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. Like, if they lost, like, 45-3, I could maybe see it. But
I don't know.
I don't think they'll lose 45-3, so.
No, but I also don't see Stanford being the kind of program that would just fire him midseason.
Right.
I don't know why. So, all right, we got Clutch Sports Notre Dame asking, is Josh okay? Referring to our friend over at One Foot Down.
Oh, the Bo Bauer.
It must have been hard for him to hear about Bo.
I haven't talked to him about it.
Yeah, and I haven't listened. I think they did their pod.
No, they didn't know. Yeah, they haven't.
Yeah, they did their pod pre Bo Bauer. News, but hopefully he is handling the news. He's handling the news well. He also asks us though, what does the defense need to do to stop with the mistakes that lead to big plays? I mean, it's one. I mean, it sounds simple, but like you know, keep your assignments. And for some of them, it's just going to be. Get more reps. Like you make mistakes. Young players make mistakes. So you got to live with that when you're playing younger players too.
And like more time in the defense too.
Yeah. New defense again, do you think the defense is a lot more, is a lot more different than maybe exactly what Freeman's was?
I couldn't say because I don't know what Freeman's was per se in terms of right. the calls and what, you know, they're asking of the guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, something me and Jamie talked about is like, look, when you have a whole position group, like the linebackers, where all of them are playing below, you know, it's like Isaiah Foskey's playing below.
Yeah.
Like everyone's just kind of everyone except for like Howard Cross,
Ben Morrison wasn't there.
Ben Morrison wasn't there. Like Tariq Bracey's playing better than he has. Like, but beyond that, like everyone else is kind of playing a little bit below what you would expect.
Exactly.
And that is kind of a telltale sign. Like they're all not totally comfortable. So
no. I've played some good offenses too, though. And it's tough to get comfortable while you're learning a defense, while you're learning a new system, you know, and you're playing some good offenses. So hopefully playing some not as good offenses will help them get to a level of comfortability that we need to be in by November.
Yeah.
We got Drew Brennan at Drew Brennan 77. Thank you for the question. Drew says he watched a 10-minute highlight reel from the Stanford USC game. The Cardinal had two turnovers within USC's 2-yard line, which completely changed the outcome of the game. They moved the ball and the wide receivers were open all day. Should we be scared of Stanford's passing attack on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, so I kind of answered this earlier. I wouldn't use the word scared. I mean, look, they're
you got to respect it.
It's the best part of their team. Put it like that.
Yeah. Looking at their PFF scores, interestingly enough, the USC game was not their highest pass ranking or pass rating for, you know, for an entire game. That was I'm not going to count Colgate, but a week later they actually had a better rating against Washington, but just terrible pass blocking that week. So yeah. It would be nice if that was kind of the case this week, because if we get our pass rush going, hopefully a little bit more than it has been. So we're going to move on here to the next question from Stephen P. It says, if Notre Dame were to wear green jerseys, what game would they wear them in? So I guess he's saying if they wear them one more time this year, what game would it be?
Well, USC.
Right.
USC. Well, okay. On a home game, I mean, I would do Clemson.
Yeah.
Because it's the rivalry, you know. It's like, and I think Clemson qualifies at this point. You know, they've played them enough lately. They've played them in enough big games. So it's like, okay, you're a rival. You know, they're okay. I think that's right. And they're going to be on the schedule consistently. So I would, right, I would do
ACC.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, that's what I would do.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I would love to see him against Clemson. I kind of feel like if they were to wear him again, it would be senior day.
Right.
And they would say it's like a reward.
For the season. That's probably likely, actually.
Yeah. That's what happened in, 2006, when they wore him for Army and then went out to SC to chance of Brady Quinn saying beat SC. And then spoiler, Notre Dame did not beat SC.
They lost by 31.
Yeah. That was not good.
No,
not good. No, I didn't like that. I didn't like that, one bit. So next question from Chris Scheiber says, Foskey has definitely underachieved through the first five games. Do you attribute that to scheme and new responsibilities? Kind of already touched on this a little bit. Well, let's start there. Well, yeah, because he's got multiple parts. Or no, he says offensive lines doubling and chipping or just regression. He hasn't looked as quick off the ball to my amateur eyes is the question.
I can't say it's double teams. I haven't seen that. I can't say it's scheme. So I don't think that they are really giving him too much there. It doesn't seem like his role is actually all that different. It seems like what he's doing is pretty standard. You could make the case he's not playing as many snaps as he normally would. But like, he's obviously playing enough snaps. It's not so like maybe he's getting like five less snaps a game. So I don't think that's the problem. I don't know. It's to be honest, it's kind of a mystery. I mean, it's similar to me to the Julian Aquara 2019 year, where like in 18, he had all these quarterback hurries, and it was like, oh, you know, he had like 37 quarterback hurries, and those are going to translate to sacks in 2019. He's going to sack the quarterback like 25 times or whatever. And then he ended up getting like six, you know. It's like, I don't know. So it's just this, the second time now where it's like you expected a huge year from someone and it didn't really happen. So I don't have a good answer for that.
Well, and the other thing, potentially that, you know, we talk about the new scheme. We talk about, some of the new responsibilities, also a new position coach. And I think with some of the struggles Notre Dame has had this year, I think we all probably underplayed some of the staff overhaul. You know, maybe more than we underplayed it more than we should, because I think there was also too, like, the weird thing about like all the change of the staff is that like the initial feeling was like, oh, it's almost the same staff, right? It's like, oh, everybody said no to Brian Kelly and everybody said yes to Marcus Freeman except the guys that we didn't want. This is great. But then, like, you know, Notre Dame lost Elston and they lost Taylor and they lost McNulty. Because they all got better. Two got better job offers, you know, to be coordinators. And Elston just left for reasons we still don't fully know. I think, you know, he said kind of why, but It also seems like there's some weirdness going there, but I think we underplayed it because it felt initially like it was almost the same staff, and then you're like at, but once you looked at everything, it's like, actually no, it's like it was like, you know, Freeman, Mickens, Reese. Who am I missing? Bayless obviously is the as a strength and conditioning coach, but other than that,
O'Leary.
That's right. Yeah, O'Leary.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, okay. It's actually like a lot of new coaches. And I think some of that is some of that's coming into play here. Next question we got from Jack O'Sullivan says, how big is the loss of Bauer given his limited playing time this year? Will his presence on the sidelines still be valuable despite him not playing?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it'll be valuable, but it's like not really. Not like, it's got to be out there.
Yeah, it's not the same.
Yeah.
And I think you and me already touched on like how maybe on the field, you know, in terms of, you know, snaps and plays, it might not be as big because his snap count really went down. He played, you know, he was in 20 plus snaps first two games and then drastic fall off since then. Mm. So, Jack also says, how did Notre Dame lose to Marshall? Wish I knew. I wish we both knew.
Totally different team. I mean, it is.
Well, I was texting with friends about this last week because it's like when we went up 20, whatever we were up, I can't remember, was it 25-6 or whatever the score was. I can't remember what it was before Notre Dame let, 25-6 and they scored 14. Somebody was like, how did this team lose to Marshall? I don't get it. I'm like, well, not that I'm saying that this is, you know, justifying the loss in any way, but I think you look at it as a team put everything they had in of the entire offseason into Ohio State. You had the CJ Stroud pictures on the sleds or whatever that Notre Dame tweeted out. They made no qualms that the entire offseason was about going into Ohio State and trying to upset the Buckeyes. And then you win, or not, you sorry, you win. You have the lead for almost three quarters of that game. And you're like, okay, all of that work was worth it. This is what we trained for all off season. And then you just can't hold on the fourth. And then they had the logistical problems coming home from that game where they said like, oh, we didn't get home till 5 or 6 in the morning. So the normal Sunday was thrown off, which the new normal Sunday we learned later was already different than what they had done under Brian Kelly because they didn't practice on Sundays under Brian Kelly, and that was a thing that Freeman wanted to do. So it's like, okay, well now your new schedule is already thrown off, and it's like, okay, well now they lost a day that would have been practice time anyway. And then I think you just had a team that's like, wow, we just went toe to toe with Ohio State. This is Marshall, and they showed up not thinking that that it was going to be a game, and they could just walk through it. And now add in the fact that you had a rookie head coach who maybe didn't know to be on the lookout for that, right? Like Brian Kelly, as much as we like making fun of him, and I love making fun of him now because I don't like him anymore, he would have been all over that as like a 20 or sorry, no, he's now he's got to be at like 87 or 88 years head coaching. I've lost track of how many years he's been a head coach because he doesn't tell me every single week in every press conference that he has how many years he's coached. He would have been all over that though. He'd have been like, okay, I need to be, you know, on high alert for letdown given the emotional strain of that game. And then all of this nonsense with travel and, you know, that we lost prep time for, like, these kids need to know that this is going to be a real game. And I think they just went into it with that. And that's not me saying like, oh, hey, it's, you know, it is what it is. It's fine, whatever. No, I'm just saying like looking back at it and how everything played out, I think that is what actually happened. And that's just, you know, Marshall came into it with, this is the biggest moment of our lives. We are going into Notre Dame Stadium and results are the results. That's kind of what I think happened. Last question we got And this is from Jared's backup, at Jared's backup 22. Could Greg eat $28 worth of food from Taco Bell?
Yeah.
Do you know the what the whole thing is about this $28?
I absolutely do.
Okay, just making sure.
Some guy said that
many people are saying you can go to have a beautiful lunch.
Inflation's so crazy that the guy went and had 3,000 calories at Taco Bell for
$28. I think $28 gets you more than 3,000 calories at Taco Bell. I'm not going to lie.
It depends what you get. I mean, so I used to I mean, I guess now it would probably be a little bit – it would be tough, right? Like when I was in college – or like, you know, shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, dude. Like, no question. But 28?
It's so that, much. First of all, 28. When you were that was a long time ago, sir. It was a long time ago for me too. But their prices were a lot less back then. $28. Well, no, but
what I'm saying is like just like the amount of food that it is now. That's the sheer what I mean.
Volume.
That's what I mean. Yeah. So like now it's five chalupas. Basically.
Chalupas $5 these days? Or more.
Well, I mean, it's like $5.19, I think.
Wow. I did not know that. I'll be honest with you, man. I don't know the last time I went to
I looked it up. I didn't. So
last time I think I went was after the Clemson game in 2015.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no. I looked it up. I haven't been to I couldn't even tell you the last time I went to Taco Bell. But yeah, so it's five chalupas, and I could eat five chalupas.
Mm.
But then, like, I would be like, if after three, it would be like, okay, I'd only be doing it just to. Chalupas are big, man. They're not. Yeah. They're not small, right? So
yeah.
I would be like, I'm only doing this to prove a point.
Yeah.
I'll say this. It's not something that I'd be like. I wouldn't go on television and be like, I spent $28 on Taco Bell.
Oh.
Like it's a bit. It would be for something like this. Like go yes. spend like $28 eating stuff. Like that's so much food. It's like it's kind of so ridiculous. Much.
Is there any fast food restaurant that's not Taco Bell that you would be like, well, that's a little bit easier.
Yeah, but let's put it like this. Is there any fast food restaurant that you can't go to and fill yourself up for like $12? Like completely fill yourself up.
Probably not that I can think of.
Right. So it's just 28. Like, what's this $28 mischief? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. What the hell? Like, what are you doing? What is going on? And it's not like you know, I could go to Carl's Jr. and get a superstar, some onion rings, and like a shake, probably for like $12. And it's like I'm gonna be full. Goofy.
I was trying to think. One of the ones I was trying to think, I was like, can I would like, and I don't know if I could do it. I was thinking of it in my mind. I'm like, well, like if I go to like Dunkin' Donuts, because I'm an East Coast guy, like I get like a large cold brew. That's like $5 right there. Because I assume this means like your beverage. I'm like, okay, that was how I was thinking, but their food is so cheap. I don't think I could do it.
I'll say this: the inflation hasn't made its way to the donut shops yet, man.
Yeah.
Still get some serious. What? There's no Carl's Jr. on the thing. That's hurtful.
There's no Carl's Jr.
I'm looking on DoorDash.
Okay.
It's not. That hurts my feelings.
It does. Man. Well, I mean, hey, we don't have them out here anyway. So I.
Well, what do you have? Hardee's?
No, that's like you got to go down to like.
Oh, there it is.
Maybe DC has a Hardee's or like that. You got to get down like DC, Virginia area before you see a Hardee's.
All right, let me see.
We have like Wendy's. We got Five Guys on the East Coast here, Northeast. McDonald's, Burger King. There's no. I don't think this is like one of those like regional. And Arby's, somewhat scattered. Arby's are great. I love Arby's. Very underrated. I'm trying to think what else we got East Coast wise. Northeast in terms. I mean, there's Shake Shack is now kind of like a chain that is making its way around. That maybe. I don't know if they have had the. I think one of the other articles I saw about this said like it's got to have a drive-through to count as fast food. I was like, okay, that's good. It's a good distinction. Because I feel like a place like Panera, you could probably get up to $28 like without like it being a stupid amount of food. But like not like a traditional fast food that has a drive-through.
Let me see here. Right, Superstar. I'm just looking at the Superstar.
Yeah, what is a Superstar? Because you said it. I was like, I have no idea what that is.
Oh, it's like a double cheeseburger, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what? Well, actually, I haven't seen one in years. Philly had a bunch of Checkers. I don't know if that is still a chain that's around.
I will say it is more expensive than I would have, I guess, anticipated.
Okay. Can we do $28?
$28?
Yes.
All right, let's see. Let me go back, actually. Does it have to be a drink? Do you have to get a drink?
Included. It doesn't have to, though.
Okay. I don't think I want to do that. All right, so I'll do that. Let's get some French fries.
Yeah. Like where we're going with this.
Okay. I don't know why I'm all into this. Let's get an ice cream shake.
Okay.
Hand scooped ice cream shake. For some reason, this says. Oh, okay. Let's do strawberry. They're all the same price. We're up to.
There's a Checkers. I didn't know. There's one on my DoorDash right now. Okay. What? Why did you ask this question? Whoever asked this, because now I just found out there's a Sonic on my DoorDash that I did not know was possible to be delivered to me. It says 72 minutes. It's a long time, but it's also late.
All right, so this is what we're doing. Okay, we're getting a Superstar with cheese.
Okay.
We are getting natural cut French fries, so basically fries, Superstar with cheese, some fries. We're getting a hand scooped ice cream shake, which is a strawberry shake. Okay. And then we are going to wash that all down with another famous star with cheese. So we're getting two burgers, French fries, and a shake. And that is all $27, $27.47. Okay. So that's probably around. Let's see here. Let's see the Superstar. I mean, that's got to be. It's like 2,000 calories.
Yeah. The
fries are another 460, so 2,400 calories. The shake. We are at 3,100 calories. And the famous star. 6-7, so 3,800 calories for $28.
There you go. That's a normal lunch, correct?
That's what I that's what I do, right? I just I take a 45-minute, take my 45-minute, and I just and then I just nap, basically just unconscious.
Let's see. I'm trying to see. All right. So from Sonic, a double cheese combo meal is $14.49, but that comes with a drink. So like to get this up to 28. All right. What would I need to add here? What can I add? And also I really just wish I did not know that this was this close. I have no idea where this is because I haven't seen it, but I wish I didn't know that it existed around me. Okay, here we go. I can get a blast. Sonic Blast. That sounds great. Even these, this is gonna be okay. Oreo, that sounds delightful. Save options. And why is it making me okay? Mini blast. Do a medium. See what we get up to for this. All right, I got two items in my cart. All right, I'm getting there. Yeah, wait, okay. It is $21 right now. That's for a double cheeseburger, tots, a medium Coke, and a medium Oreo cookies pieces blast. So I still need $6. I don't know that I could. I mean, again, I could probably try, but I would just be useless for 24 to 48 hours. But now I'm probably going to get Sonic pretty soon. So thank you for the question. So now that I know that can be delivered to me, because that's what I need more of in my life. It's terrible food, or food that's terrible for me. You know what? I feel like that was the last question. I don't see where we go from that either. I think we just call it after this. See, there was no reviews this week, or at least there wasn't, and I checked as of this morning. So please leave us some reviews. We haven't read a review during the show in a while because we haven't had any. So leave those. We'll read them. You know what we didn't do? Well, you already said your prediction. What did you say you called?
41-21.
41-21. I'm going to say then 42-17. I want them under 20.
Okay.
Optimistic. It's probably way too optimistic. Maybe I'll go 38-17. 38-17. Subject to change by the time I write a prediction post. But all right, everybody. Thank you, as always, for the questions and for listening. And as always, go Irish.